From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 338, Memory Management, with guest Clint Huffman, recorded Monday, September 16th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back an oldie but a goodie. Clint Huffman is with me again. He's one of the premier field engineers. In fact, I think he's the first one I ever talked to, and I've talked to all of them since. And also the guy behind Performance Analysis of Logs, PAL, which is a tool that I love and count on to this day. Sir, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Always fun to talk to you. You know, we have conversations that aren't recorded. It's hard to imagine, but it's true.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's why I say the secret to my success and in this job is really beer. I mean, just having beer with somebody makes all the difference. You can have all the email conversations and phone conversations you want, but, you know, when you finally have beer with somebody, it just makes all the difference.
It changes things. Absolutely. And I've been doing a lot more work with my customers along the DevOps line, bringing operations and development teams closer together. And my statement is always, pizza is the universal lubricant. Just go get some, because there's something very fundamental about breaking bread with people.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that earlier, like a couple of years ago, you had a podcast where you actually just talked about people getting along with each other, and something just having a meal together actually makes all the difference.
Yeah. Well, and actually building up trust, which I think, you know, I feel like we don't build trust while we're at work. That's where we challenge each other's trust. But really building it happens sort of outside of work, and that's often only lunchtime. It's the only time we see a lot of these people that isn't actually at work. So,
and having that more bonding connection with people makes all the difference.
Totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. So what have you been working on?
Oh, wow. Well, as of last night, I was up till about 2 a.m. working on the PAL tool, doing some major updates to it. But besides that, just mainly focusing on core Windows infrastructure and teaching it and stuff. And as far as the job, I've been really just going on every single Windows performance gig I can get myself on. I was in a two-week gig in Chicago just working on a high CPU issue. They thought it'd take 2 weeks to solve, and I got it solved in the first day.
it's either going to be a day or a week, isn't it? There's really never anything in between those two.
Well, it all depends on who you get and the skill sets. And it just happened to be something that was just right up my alley, and I was able to solve real quickly. I mean, you never know with these things, and sometimes you do need to have that extra time just in case, because you ever know when you're dealing with something you don't know about.
And is it typically server issues you're dealing with, or do you deal with workstation performance much?
Well, mostly servers, but many times people will say, hey, Clint, you know, my workstation over here is not running so well. Can you take a quick look at it? I'm like, sure, yeah, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know, as a matter of fact, when I go home to visit back in Ohio every year. Yeah, we go there for about 2 weeks every year, and it's funny. It's like everybody comes out of the woodwork. All my family and friends say, hey, Clint, can you look at my computer? It's running a little slow and stuff. And, you know, the thing is, I'm happy to do it, right? So what I do is I have everybody over for one session. I say, bring over your computer. We'll have beer. We'll have a dinner, and we'll all do it at the same time, and we'll all run auto runs.
Really?
The sys internals tool auto runs is probably the best way to get most computers back up and running from a slow start, because you have all that junk that gets loaded up during the startup of Windows. And once you get most of that, usually you just show it to them and say, do you recognize this? Well, like, Clint, I'm not very tech savvy. Well, that's okay. It's okay. Do you recognize this? If you don't, we'll go ahead and remove it, right? And we'll reboot the box. And if it's something you need, we'll just re-add it again. It's like, it's really that safe. And it's amazing that the difference that it makes.
You're just talking about the accumulation of cruft, right? All of these things that want to be part of your startup process, and you really don't need them there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, trust me, that could be its own little podcast there, too.
Oh, for sure.
Mark Rozinovich has that hunting malware session, which actually goes into auto runs and Process Explorer and using both of those to actually identify malware and get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So good stuff there.
Yeah, so way to go.
Yeah, other than that, I mean, it's been book.
You're working on, we talked about this book, wow, it must have been 2 years ago, right? Is this the performance book?
Oh, I've been wanting to write it for years, but finally, as of about the beginning of this year, this January or so, I finally got a publisher, and so it's Syngress, S-Y-N-G-R-E-S-S, mm-hmm. And I've got a contract with them. I've been fully working on that book, and it's due out early next year, so early 2014. So, and the book is going to be the Windows Performance Field Guide. It's definitely a practical approach to all these performance issues. It's like, I kind of think of it's like a choose your own adventure type of book. You know,
right.
Do you save the princess in the burning tower, or do you save the child in the burning tower? You know, I mean, if you want to save the princess, go to page 10. You got to want to save the baby, go to page 20. You know,
right.
So those types of things. You know, and so it kind of starts off like, well, is the system hanging when it boots? Or does it hang after you've logged in? You know, when is it hung? Is it a complete hang or nothing moves? Or is it kind of jittering? You're kind of starting off with like the WebMD.com.
So how sick
checker.
Are you?
Yeah. So like, you know, it's always those symptoms. Tell me your symptoms, right? Where do you go from there? So that's chapter zero, right? Where you just go through that troubleshooting process. And it's straight and to the point. There's no BS there. It's just, okay, here's exactly what you need to be doing. Here's exactly what you need to look at. And then the rest of the book is basically reference material to supply that.
Right.
And of course, if you just want a tool to look at it, then you got the PAL tool at pal.coplex.com, and you can just go down there, run that, and then it'll do the reds, greens, and yellows of telling you what's good and bad about that stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of just collecting all of that instrumentation data knowledge from the team, so that they're the ones who know what good numbers and bad numbers look like, so that you can give us a gauge. You know, I've always described Performance Monitor as it's like your own little internet. Everything you need to know is in there. You just can't find it.
I find myself quoting that a lot. And that came from you. And I even tell people where it came from because it really is so true. Matter of fact, I did put that in the book.
Really?
In fact,
that's great.
Your quote is in my book at the very beginning of that. So on chapter one. So. Because the thing about performance analysis, the thing you have to really realize is that there is nobody who knows everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll never, ever find anybody who knows all that stuff.
Now, they're making new instrumentation faster than you can learn it.
Yeah, the things are going so fast. Matter of fact, I was at a conference just the other, just a few months ago, and there's so much new stuff in Server 2012. I'm like, wow, I feel ignorant about this stuff because there's so much new stuff. I feel tired that I can't even keep up with this stuff. So, but I also find that the core concepts that I teach about core Windows architecture and how memory really works, people still struggle with those mm-hmm. basics. And so I do find my little niche of where I'm actually useful, because it's important to be useful.
Well, isn't the correct answer to memory problems just get more memory?
No. I mean, years and years ago, back in the DOS days, maybe,
right.
But even then, you were limited to 640K and could go beyond that. And, I mean, we've always dealt with that. A matter of fact, on 32-bit systems, if you add too much physical RAM, you actually make the page frame number database, that's a virtual memory database inside the kernel's virtual memory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a small space there in 32-bit. And, because you have 4 gigabytes to work with, 2 gigabytes that the kernel actually has to work with of that,
right.
No matter what kind of hardware you got. And then if you reduce it down to 1 gigabyte with 3GB, you're really doing really small space. The problem, though, is the more RAM that you add onto the machine, the more the kernel has to keep track of that in that database,
right.
The bigger that database gets.
And it can't be more than 4 gigs, right? So at most 32-bit machines I see these days always have 4 gigs in it. Is that actually bad?
Well, no. Actually, most 32-bit systems technically can go to 64 gigabytes of RAM.
Okay. Technically?
Most. Now, here's the deal. Mathematically, the largest number you can represent with 32 bits is 4 gigabytes. There's no way you can get past that. It's a mathematical law. So you're right. Standard 32-bit systems cannot see more than 4 gigabytes of physical memory. With that said, years ago, the AMD and Intel processors began to support what's called physical address extensions, PAE, which allows the physical processors to address up to 64 gigabytes of physical memory, or RAM, as we like to call it. And so But the thing is, you have to have a 32-bit kernel in Windows that is a PAE kernel in order to address that. Now, with that said, that means that enterprise and data center editions of Windows Server 2003, for example, can address that 64 gigabytes of RAM. But consumer operating systems, Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows XP, all these consumer-based operating systems are truncated down to 4 gigabytes.
Right.
And now I asked the Windows product team. I had dinner with the product team. I'm like, okay. And I talked to the person who made these decisions. I'm like, okay, tell me, what was this, a marketing ploy? What was going on here?
Right.
Why are you truncating down these operating systems to 4 gigabytes? And he looked at me and he was honest about this. And he says, the driver stability of consumer operating systems just really wasn't there. And we had to make a decision to just go ahead and truncate it because of that stability. So, and that's the answer he gave me. And I believe him.
Yeah, I know. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, think about how much of the Vista debacle was just bad drivers. You know, like we have serious driver issues with this crazy ecosystems of anybody can make a computer and anybody can put a part in it.
Yeah.
Servers are tighter for a reason. And that makes a lot of sense to me. I just have never dealt with, you know, as a guy who's done lots of web performance tuning and so forth, we've always done the 4 gig thing. And if we wanted to do more than that, we switched to 64-bit OS. It didn't cost any more to do that. Like, why wouldn't you always do that?
Well, the other thing that I think people have to understand here is that just adding RAM doesn't necessarily help their apps.
Of course.
And a very core concept that everybody has to understand is that applications and the kernel are first and foremost in what's called virtual address space.
Mm-hmm.
And that virtual address space, that memory given to these processes, has absolutely nothing to do with the physical memory and the paging file. Nothing else, completely nothing to do with that. You could have 4 megabytes of RAM or even a terabyte of RAM, but if it's a 32-bit app, it's by default, it's only going to see 2 gigabytes,
right?
No matter what you do.
No matter what you do.
And the people just don't understand, like, why my web application's crashing at, you know, out of memory when we got all this RAM installed, and I have to explain that there's a fundamental difference between those two.
Well, and I've found even with 32-bit OSs, 32-bit OS on a pure IIS box with 4 gigs of RAM in it, you only get about 800 megs of usable .NET heap. Like, there's memory's tied up with, I know it's a 2 gig space, but it's being used by other stuff.
Yeah, so, it does. What it does is it pre-allocates the entire .NET framework in that virtual address space.
And so that's not free. Like, so I've run tests where we've deliberately ate up lots of memory and iteratively done that to let the .NET memory generations run a few times. And after about a half hour or so, you find that it gets to about 800 megs, and then it does a GC to toss it back down, and it just won't let it go much higher than that. That's all it's really got to work with. But when we flip to 64-bit, compiled as 32-bit and added some more memory, we were actually able to get memory pools of 2 gigs and fill them to 2 gigs. Well, 1.8 before they would really freak out.
Well, the big difference there is, like we mentioned earlier, the biggest number you can represent is 4 gigabytes with 32 bits.
Right.
So when you run a 32-bit application on a 64-bit version of Windows, what you're doing is, as long as it's large address aware, which is a real easy to do flip bit that you can do during compiling, or there's also, if you don't have source code, which I know some people don't, you can always flip the bit using some resource tools. Image config is one of them, that you can just flip that bit. But as long as it's large address aware, which it is, the kernel is no longer in that 2 gig address space.
Yes.
It's actually in the 8 terabytes of virtual address space. It's already vacated that space. So now that app, the 32-bit app on a 64-bit operating system, as long as it's large address aware, can get up to 4 gigabytes of virtual address space that
you
can work with. So, yeah, it's a big difference. That's what I'm telling everybody today. If they're running into these out-of-memory conditions, their apps, to go to that, and they can't upgrade or compile to 64-bit, then go with 32-bit on 64-bit operating system.
That's been my advice for a while as a web performance guy. It's really not easy to make a 32-bit .NET app run in 64-bit. There's a lot of stuff you have to do, and often they're not willing to do all of that testing. But if you compile as 32 and run in 64, and you've got that large memory space available, stuff goes pretty well. And then we're just playing games with memory pools in IIS, which we can do all day.
Yeah, but the whole point of virtual address space, and people are like, why can't Windows fix this virtual memory problem? Well, the thing is, it was never intended to be a problem in the first place.
Right.
You know, back when we had 32-bit established, that was back in 1993 when you had 4 megabytes of RAM.
Yeah.
You know, and you had 2 gigabytes that's private to each process back then. I mean, that was unimaginably large.
That was the unimaginably large limit, like the 8 terabyte limit is today.
Correct, yes.
You know, it's the same game. And you got to think 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we're going to be hitting the 8 terabyte limit and being pissed about it, too.
Oh, then we'll come out with a 12 TB switch. How's that one?
Exactly.
Well, you know, one thing I do have to say, that we kind of realized that 8 terabytes might not be enough for the next version of Office. I'm joking, by the way.
I can't believe you said that.
No, I'm joking, obviously. No,
I would have said Outlook, but yeah.
Joke, by the way. That joke I just did was actually a David Solomon and Mark Rozenovich joke, by the way. I'm kind of playing off some of their jokes a bit.
That's too easy. It's just too easy, yeah, really. No, but it's an interesting truth about how you actually address memory. And of course, I keep falling back on web apps, but you got to run into these same issues in other environments as well.
Well, you know, it's all the time. It's just the thing is that most of the time when I'm dealing with virtual memory problems, is almost always going to be dealing with 32-bit apps in some way, shape, or form. And all I can do is encourage people to get off or migrate as soon as they can off of 32-bit because it was never intended to be a barrier. And being 32-bit, there's always that potential there.
Right. But I've always had the argument that there are very few real 64-bit apps or real need for 64-bit apps because it's only when you need to address more than 2 gigs of RAM.
Well, that's I hate it when people say that. By the way,
because okay.
when you're not really addressing RAM directly, you never were.
Right.
You're addressing a virtual space that doesn't really exist. I always like to think of it as the holodeck on the Star Trek. So seriously, that's the best analogy I could possibly come up with. Where basically you're let's say I want to go visit the Great Wall of China. I walk into the holodeck suite, right? You know, we got the, and obviously the Great Wall of China can't fit into the hull of the ship, and this is not physically possible, right? Or even that room for that matter. But by turning on the holodeck, I can now, I virtually can see the entire, you know, I can visit the Great Wall of China, and that's
right.
All there. And, you know, as I start touching things, actually physically touching the wall with my hand and walking across, that becomes physical memory because it has to physically manifest into a working set, which is RAM and stuff like that. And actually, it has to be there. And only the parts that I'm actually touching actually have to be physical. And as I walk down the path, you know, the memory that I touched earlier, the things that I touched earlier can now be reclaimed and not be physical anymore simply because I'm not there anymore. I'm not actively doing anything with it.
Right.
You know, and the faster I walk along the path, the larger my working set has to be because it does have to be physical at that point. And so I have to tell people that, yes, it's a 2 gig address space, but it's not RAM. It's a virtual memory space of that application. Just like the 8 terabytes. People are like, oh my gosh, how can a 64-bit system or an application have a private 8 terabytes? And we can just dish out as many as an infinite number of these 8 terabyte virtual address spaces. And people are like, how is that possible? Do you have a large paging file? No. The thing is that virtual environment is completely and utterly separate from physical resources of the machine.
Right.
Just, we can just keep giving it because it's fake, because it doesn't matter. It's only when it's actually touched by or accessed by the application that then it becomes manifested in the physical memory, and then the memory manager has to deal with that from a RAM and paging file perspective.
So I guess once you're dealing with space this big, obviously you're not, quote, running out of memory. Like, why do we ever think that we are?
I'm not sure why. I mean, well, it's always been the notion that the more RAM you have installed, the better.
So yes.
Because when you're not using it, we're using it as disk cache.
Right.
So if you accessed a big file and then close the application, that memory still exists in RAM. It's just that it's been orphaned. It's no longer within a process anymore. But it can be reused at any time.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, if you happen to access that file again with the right permissions, it's right there in memory. There.
Well,
and
that's still totally SQL Server, right? If you just keep throwing more and more memory at SQL Server, it starts caching whole tables in that memory.
Sure,
and
yeah,
stuff
no
goes
problem.
Faster and faster.
Memory Manager works the same way. You know, they're actually, you know, this, here's the thing, too. There's actually three primary ways of running out of memory in a given system. Mm-hmm. There's, of course, the processes themselves running out of virtual address space.
Right.
The kernel can run out of virtual address space. Mm-hmm. I consider that kind of one resource, by the way, because it's virtual, you know, both, yep, on both sides. So virtual memory is one way you can run out of virtual address space. And I'm not talking paging file and RAM. I'm just talking about just the memory themselves of those apps in the kernel.
Yep.
And then the second way you can run out of memory is what we call committed memory. And the sum of the paging files and the RAM, it becomes that commit limit. And it's a fictitious resource. It really doesn't exist as anything. But the thing is, it's the accounting system for the operating system to know how much can I commit or how much can I promise of RAM and paging file as if it was a single resource. And so once it hits that commit limit where it can't go, where it knows that I've promised out too much, it'll stop. And there, that's when applications won't get any more committed memory, meaning
right,
backed by physical resources, and they hang or crash. Kernel happens the same way. If it can't get committed memory, mm-hmm, all that happens. You know, cats living with dogs. I mean, it's just a bad situation all around, right?
Chaos.
Yes. So that's another way of running out of system committed memory. And that's, those are the two numbers you see on Task Manager,
right,
the ones right next to each other. Now, the third way is simply RAM itself. People will like to do what's called pages locked in memory with some applications, and that's non-pageable memory. We can't do anything about that. It just consumes RAM. Driver locked memory would be another one, such as Hyper-V or VMware, where they just they have a driver that locks and cordons off portions of RAM.
You right,
can't page that out. And you can literally run the system out of physical memory and none of it be pageable.
Mm-hmm.
So we just can't free it up.
And it's not necessarily all the physical memory. It's just you're trapped there. Actually, I've just pulled up Task Manager on Windows 8.1, and I'm looking at the memory map here. And I'm sure people always have these questions of what the how is that much memory in use? What's the difference between committed, cached, paged, and non-paged? Should we just run those down for folks?
Oh, sure, sure. I can explain all that.
Sure.
So this is a much larger conversation. It's in my Vital Signs workshop, mm-hmm, that I explain all this. Matter of fact, my book covers all this too. I'll try to make it as simple as possible. Free memory is considered all the supreme clean, all zeros written to that memory for the most part.
Right.
Some of it is a little dirty, but it's private or dirty memory, but it's completely useless memory that the application either freed, had gone away, and is now been cleaned and it's just sitting there. So if you have a lot of free RAM on a box, that is how much RAM you're really literally wasting.
Right.
And no real good use for it at all. Simply, it's just taking up electricity. So if you over-provision too much RAM on a box, take a look at your free memory during peak usage, and that'll tell you how much you can yank without causing any problems whatsoever on the system.
Well, and I guess the argument here is having free RAM is not good. The RAM should be in use.
It should be, yes, yes. And what happened was in Vista, that's the only field we showed. And, of course, we want low free memory because we want to use all that RAM. And, of course, people thought that Vista was a huge memory hog because of that.
Right.
But it wasn't until Windows 7 Windows 7 and later, as far as family of products, that we finally came up and showed available memory, which is a real thing. And available memory is the sum of the free memory as well as a standby list. And the standby list is basically our disk cache. This is stuff that can be reused at any time. It doesn't cost us anything to reuse it, but it's still sitting there in case we need to reuse it for disk cache.
Right.
And so the sum of the standby and free ends up being your available. And anytime available gets low, when it gets low like that, the next thing we have to do is incur disk I/O if we need any more memory beyond that.
Right.
And that's where you started getting a lot of hard page faults and the disks started becoming overwhelmed and stuff like that.
Sure.
So a lot of things like that.
But I got to think the page pool and non-page pool is the one that baffles most people because it's such a small number relative to the amount of memory you actually have.
Well, yeah, page pool, non-page pool is all the kernel memory stuff.
Right.
The thing with kernel memory, though, is it's in 32-bit address space. It was just you had the 2 gig address space of the kernel subdivided into non-pageable memory and pageable memory. Now, this memory is used by drivers, and the driver developer determines which pool to actually use. And just like processes, they have a certain virtual limit size that their maximum that they can use, but they also have physical sizes that they can get up to as well that it also limits them. So it makes it very complicated to figure out the real practical maximums for these pools, because you're dealing with both an adjustable virtual size as well as an adjustable physical size. So, for example, non-pageable memory, I have to consider both the virtual size that may be bigger, smaller, depending on if it's 3 GB, if it's 32-bit, 64-bit, all of that taken into consideration, version of the operating system, and then it's non-pageable, so I have to look at the RAM that's on the system to see how large it can be on given with the RAM resources. Likewise, pageable memory or page pool, I have to look at the same virtual space as well, but then I'm looking at the committed memory side, because it is pageable memory. So
right.
I'm looking at the commit limit sizes, which is our RAM and paging file, and looking at that. Luckily, and what I've been working on the past few days here is Powell pretty much takes a lot of that. The Powell tool takes all that in consideration, asks you all these pertinent questions, kind of like going to a doctor. Say, hey, I got this symptom and this symptom, and this is how I am, and you know, and then finally it says, okay, I'm going to guesstimate that this is probably your maximum size, and then I'm going to watch the performance counter of usage there and determine if you're getting anywhere close to that. Unfortunately, the only true way to know the real sizes of page pool and non-page pool, as far as their virtual limits, is to do a kernel debug, and that's not for the faint of heart when you do that.
No kidding.
So, luckily, Process Explorer, the system kernels tool, has the with symbols and debugging tools installed. You can actually get those numbers from the view system information within that.
Once again, Process Explorer is your friend.
Exactly.
You know what? Know it, learn it, love it. You need Process Explorer in your life.
Oh, definitely. I demo it all the time. Now, the next step there is, with applications, when you have application memory leaks and stuff like that, that story's been told. There's plenty of tools out there to do memory analysis for those.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the kernel pools, that's a little different. Most of the time, we use a tool called Poolmon. That's Poolmon.exe. And that's a free tool you can download from Microsoft. And it doesn't require installation. You just run it straight up. And again, it's kind of a command line interface, and it tells us the tag numbers of the drivers that are consuming the most in that kernel memory space. So it's a real handy tool for that. Mark Rozinovich has a blog of Pushing the Limits of Kernel Memory blog, which goes into more detail with that. But if you're running Windows 7 or Server 2008 R2 or later, you can actually use the Windows Performance Analyzer tool, which is our latest, greatest, super cool tool, our microscope to the operating system, as I like to call it. And that, if you do pool usage, which is one of the checkboxes on the recorder part of that tool, you could then see how the tags are increasing and decreasing, very similar to performance counters.
And the Windows Performance Analyzer is part of the WPT, the Windows Performance Toolkit?
Yeah, Windows Performance Toolkit. Yeah, so it's kind of weird. You have the Windows Performance Recorder, Windows Performance Analyzer, kind of like two tools that are kind of sewn together at the hip here.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's part of the Windows Performance Toolkit, which is then part of the Windows ADK, which is Assessment Deployment Toolkit that you can also download. So basically, you start off the Windows space ADK, download it, uncheck everything and enable just the performance toolkit, and
right,
you'll get that installed. In order to use that, though, if you don't already have the paging executive, as far as that disabled, where we don't page the executive, if you don't have that already set, it will require a reboot in order to get that pool tagging working.
Cool.
That was a mouthful there.
Yeah, it is, without a doubt. But definitely, you know, this is just sort of helping you figure out who's the culprit in how this machine is struggling.
Yeah. Well, the reason we bring up kernel memory in the first place, I want to make sure that people understand that we're just not talking about something that nobody cares about,
mm-hmm,
right? This isn't a scientific anomaly that nobody cares about. The thing is, when you run out of page pool, the system will have very odd behavior. You'll keep seeing insufficient resources for this task.
Right.
You won't be able to start new applications. Applications that are running right now won't be able to get committed memory anymore. They may start getting weird errors. Most applications just don't handle this. So it's a very odd thing. The other thing is, if you run out of non-pageable kernel memory, mm-hmm. that's the death nail. Every time I've run the system out on purpose to show what the behavior is, it completely and utterly hangs. I mean, the UI won't paint anymore. There's just nothing you can do. It's done. Until that driver deallocates that memory, the system is just can't handle it anymore. So that's why you got to watch these guys. And it's not so important on 64-bit because we have a large amount of virtual address space, 8 terabytes, and
yeah.
These guys are in a high like 384 gigabytes for page pool. And then non-page memory is usually about 75% of RAM or even 100% of RAM that it can get up to. So in those systems, it's not so much a big deal.
Yeah. And that's sort of the key to this. So many things seem to be answered by, you really want to be in 64-bit.
Yeah, that's the thing, and that's what I've been trying to say, is that a virtual address space is supposed to be unimaginably large, and that's why we want that 8 terabytes, so that's not a limiting factor,
right.
And that we're taking full advantage. It's like going back to the holodeck, right? If you want to give 10 people a vacation to Bahamas, or they each will have their own vacation, but you want to have it there at the facility, well, you can't really physically do that, way too expensive to do that. So the idea is they have them all have their own private virtual environments where they only consume the physical resources that they actually physically touch. And therefore, it's much, much more efficient on physical resources. And that's how the memory manager works.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wow, a half hour just flew by again, Clint. This always happens with us.
I got so much more to say, though. That's the thing. It's like I got the kernel memory stuff. And by the way, I did meet with the with what I call the architect. Kind of like the Matrix. You go to the source, you meet the architect, right? So that's Landy Wang, by the way.
Yeah.
He took over for David Cutler years ago for the kernel. And so, but I met with his tester guy, Pavel Lebedinsky. I can't even pronounce his last name. Lebedinsky is what his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And met with him, and the guy was just, I just said, hey, if we have a committed memory problem on a system or a kernel memory problem, what do we need to do? And it was so refreshing to know that the tools and techniques that I've been using for the most part are really spot on. And so that was really, really good to know.
But deep down, is this, we shouldn't normally be getting into this trouble. Is this badly behaved software, or is it just bad drivers?
Well, when it comes to kernel memory, it's going to be bad drivers.
Right.
But the thing is, drivers do what the applications tell them to do.
Yes.
So, whenever we see a page pool leak or non-page pool leak, first thing I go looking for is there an application that's also leaking memory in parallel with it, and a lot of times, leaking handles or something.
Yeah.
That's usually the root cause. It might not be the driver's fault completely. But the other thing is, if you're seeing this kind of stuff, even without doing any analysis, just make sure you're on the latest drivers of a lot of things.
And drivers around memory are real low level. These are motherboard level drivers.
Oh yeah, they have direct access to physical memory.
Well, so. And I've run. It's not like it's a video drive or anything like that. Like folks don't realize that stuff gets updated. That you can go in and you get that new driver, and machines can be dramatically better.
Yeah,
it's a surprise.
There's a lot of tells, like high DPCs, which are for procedure calls. If I see that, it's either sound card or network adapter.
Right.
Yeah, and well, if you're not running a sound card on your server, kind of narrows down what it is.
Gets a little just obvious.
Little tells
now.
Like that, little symptoms like that, yeah. And that's kind of stuff I try to put in PAL. Little tells like that, pattern matching. The only way you're going to get that is through experience and doing that kind of stuff. So
absolutely. Well, Clint, it's always fun to talk to you, and I'll make sure to put all these links in the show notes around. Got to go to PAL. You want to know about the Windows Performance Toolkit. Auto Runs and Process Explorer are just must-haves.
Yeah. There was one more link I want to point out that
sure.
That I just simply updated. Now, I'm doing a lot of these little cool things I'm putting in my book, obviously, but I also have a parallel site. It's a Microsoft TechNet Wiki site, and the link to where I'm putting all this stuff in with the help of a lot of other people is aka.ms/PFE perf guide. So that as a performance guide. If you go there, that's a quick link to go to the landing page for the start here to start working through your memory through your problems.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great little site. I'm just looking at it now. Okay. Definitely yep. worth taking a peek through. Clint Huffman, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.